Welcome to J-Root Radio Healthy Living. Once again, my name is Eliezer Gruber, a certified nutritionist with offices in Borough Park and Yerushalayim. I'm the developer, for our first-time listeners, I'm the developer of the NutriSupreme Research and Education Center, located in the heart of Borough Park at 4315 14th Avenue. My vision, my mission in developing the NutriSupreme Research and Education Center was to create a model, a very well-balanced, a well-scientific model in order to be able to educate and bring a clear, very clear, crystal-clear awareness to the public, the value and the benefits of how healthy living lifestyle changes has such a profound effect, such as optimal nutrition, a regular exercise program. We had a very good show. I hope all of our listeners were with us last week. Proper sleep, stress management can have such a profound effect on our positive effect on our emotional and our physical well-being. There's no question. I have witnessed for decades, literally decades, seeing the positive effect with so many people across the lifespan, from children to their precious geriatric senior population, whether I'm addressing immune system, immune function, which is a very big problem today. We have such an imbalanced, most of the people in the United States, such an imbalanced immune system, digestive system. How many people with their IBS, their constipations, their bloating, their gas, their even their IBD, the inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's, colitis, brain function, foggy brain, not having a clear focus, not even able to sit, which we're going to see today. Today we have a great show lined up for today. But brain function, circulatory system, how many people, we're just living a sedentary way of life. We need to get moving to increase blood flow to all parts of the body. The brain takes out about 25%, picks up 25% of all the blood that the heart pumps out. So we need a good blood flow to the brain. Hormonal, the endocrine system, the skin, a hair. How many people, young people, thinning of hair, cops of hair coming out when they're in the shower. Our hair, our skin. This is only a sample of what's going on with us inside of us. So my goal is to address one's genetic individual biochemistry. It's not one size fits all. We each have a different makeup. And to order to give a, to develop, to design a roadmap, how these lifestyle habits for this particular, each individual biochemical makeup, looking at blood work and creating this roadmap, this individual plan for one's unique biochemistry. There's so much confusion. I've spoken in the We've been on the air for about a year and a half, over a year and a half. So much confusion among people and even the professionals in the healthcare field. What is called optimal nutrition? I am constantly communicating on an ongoing basis with healthcare professionals around the globe in order to create this ideal food pyramid model for optimal health and wellness. In order to address also a second phase from the NutriSupreme Education, NutriSupreme and Education Center, a second phase to develop a line of products, dietary supplements, in order to be able to address the imbalances, the deficiencies, which is so massive today. In order to do this, I spent so many decades in order to design up-to-date, based on science, not just something pulling out of the hat, based on scientific data, innovative formulations are being recommended even by the medical field today. I have doctors, in fact, about an hour before I came on the show today, I had a call from Eretz Srell, from a doctor, a U.S.-based or U.S.-trained physician who has now made Aliyah, living in Eretz Srell. He said, Eliezer, how can we work together? I have certain formulas that I need for you, from you in order to, for you to manufacture for me, for my private practice, in order to able to address these imbalances, these deficiencies. So again, we want to have the goal is high-quality, science-based formulations in order to address these deficiencies and this imbalance. the prescription pad model, when we go to a doctor and a doctor writes out whatever our problem might be, whether it's a sugar problem, whether it's a heart problem, whether it's a psychiatric problem, whether it's an endocrine problem, the prescription pad model for today's chronic disease is not addressing in any form or fashion the root, the foundation of the problems. And I would like to clarify myself. Again, I have a very healthy relationship with the medical field. On an ongoing basis, I'm in contact with physicians from almost every field of medicine. And in fact, today I was on the phone with a conference with a psychiatrist, a well-known psychiatrist, in order again to bridge this very, very wide gap between medicine and nutrition. And on the phone with this psychiatrist, we were speaking about the pharmaceutical protocol along with the nutraceutical protocol. You need both. In many, many cases, you need both. No question about it. Today's show, without any further delay, today's show, we have a very special guest, an acclaimed educator, an education consultant, Mrs. Rivka Schoenfeld, we've had on the air before, has served our Jewish community for close to 30 years. Yes, 30 years. She founded and directs the widely acclaimed educational program, SOS, servicing all grade levels in secular as well as Hebrew studies. A Kriya and reading specialist, she has given dynamic workshops and has set up reading labs in many, many schools. In addition, she offers evaluation, GED preparation, social skill training, shidduch coaching. We've had her on about shidduch coaching, focusing on building self-esteem in children, teens, and adults. Mrs. Schoenfeld has become very involved in the area of chinuch with school children, and as such, she has become an expert in many of the issues affecting children today, which I can testify is massive, including attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And as a matter of fact, in this week's edition of the Bina magazine, on sale now, I recommend everybody get the Bina magazine this week. Mrs. Schoenfeld moderates a round table, including the beloved Mechaneches Rebbe Tzinsera Bolka, Dr. Gary Aberbach, and myself on the issue of ADD, ADHD in children, which is massive. I'm pleased to have Mrs. Schoenfeld on Healthy Living once again so we may discuss the issues of attention deficit disorder and children from both a social as well as a nutritional perspective. Without further delay, I welcome you again to the show, Healthy Living, Mrs. Schoenfeld.
Thank you, Rabbi Eliezer. Thank you for the introduction, but it was a pleasure reading and hearing all your feelings about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It is really, really very sound, all the things you say about attention deficit, which we will discuss now on the air.
Yeah, we hope to. I'm sure we're going to get a wealth of information from you. You know, I mentioned, I believe, to my wife, you know, in this era or this today's society in the United States, it's so massive, the increase of attention deficit disorder. In fact, I think we should put a sign around us that we're not attention deficit. We don't have ADD because it's normal to have ADD. It's like everybody has ADD today.
So well said. Really, truly well said.
So let's start with a question that we have for you. Today, many kids today are not as attentive and focused as they should be, especially in a classroom setting. What, in your opinion, your professional opinion, is considered a normal lack of focus and attention and many children have? And when is the lack of attention something that parents should be concerned with to the possibility as far as considering seeking help?
Okay, that's very basic, you know, for you and I, but there are a few opinions on this, and I'd like to share some of them with you. There are different levels of attention that are normal depending on the age of the child. Some people argue that children's attention span should be around 2 to 3 minutes per year of their age. Therefore, a two-year-old would have a 6-minute attention span, and a kindergartner would have a 15-minute attention span. That said, different children respond better to different types of activities. Some enjoy more visual stimulation, others like to move around when they learn, and the studies show that girls generally have longer attention spans in their traditional sense of the word, sitting and staying power, rather than boys when they are younger.
What do you contribute that to?
It's just the nature. Girls are given less hyped up cars and trucks. They're given dolls, and they sit longer. It's just the nature of a girl and the way girls are dealt with. That's what I attribute it to. But I'd like to add one more thing. There are ways to build short attention spans, but you should only be concerned, in answer to your question, if your child needs help, if your child's lack of attention gets in the way of social or academic gains. That is the key note of this entire little summary that I just mentioned. If it gets in the way of their social relationships and their academics, then it is advisable to go and speak to a professional about getting the child evaluated.
I mean, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, there is the statistics as the follows. 1 in 5 school boys, boys now, not girls, more boys than girls, as we you spoke about, are will be diagnosed with ADD or ADD, actually the diagnosis is ADHD. 1 in 5, that's 20% of school boys today are going to be diagnosed with this problem of ADHD. It seems like it's such an alarming epidemic.
I don't look upon it as an epidemic. I look upon it as we could take the ADHD and use it to our advantage. People that have ADHD will, I believe, after school, they just have to sit through school, will really exceed children that are doing beautifully, beautifully sitting in their seats now in school. I use ADHD with my clients as a complete advantage, and I teach them how to use it as an advantage. As we go on in speaking, I'll share many ideas with you.
I mean, you have a lot of scientists, you have a lot of geniuses well-known over the generations, you know, that have had been diagnosed with ADHD. You're right. They could be, they have a tremendous amount of talent. We just need to unlock the door over here and let the talents flow, you know, and not to have them locked in a box with this so-called, I don't like to say diagnosis, but this so-called condition, and unlock this door and just let it flow, their talents, which is tremendous. They have tremendous talents.
Right, and I'd like to share with you, you know, the many ideas how, you know, we can help them.
Okay, please do.
But in the beginning, I just want to share that, you know, I've spoken, you know, for the round table, I've spoken to many professionals, you know, which age range intervention is the most effective for children with ADHD. I feel the younger, the better with the ADHD. The problem is that there is a no definite diagnostic test for ADHD, and therefore children are not diagnosed with it as early as some other learning disorders. However, if intervention starts at age 3, it is much more effective than if it starts at age 5. Now, when I say intervention, I don't mean medicine. I spoke to Dr. Gary Aberbach, and he feels that no meds should even be started before the age of 6.
So really, at age 3 is the most effective, that's the age for intervention?
If people see the symptoms, many times parents will only recognize symptoms after their Mora or Rebbe will call up Mommy and Tati and say, there's a problem here. Your child can't stay focused for more than 5 minutes.
I mean,
some parents are totally unaware of it. They think the child is childish or immature, and they'll grow out of it. But many parents don't recognize the symptoms at age 3. Many do, but many don't as well.
I mean, I think we should also add on, I mean, I see very clearly from very young age, even younger, even age 2, that the nutritional intervention protocol, because there's so many imbalances and deficiencies, they're just not getting what brain chemistry needs. And if they don't get what the brain chemistry needs, it's like building a house without bringing a foundation in to build that onto that house. There's no question.
That's true, Reb Eliezer. You are 1,000,000% accurate. You're right on the button. The children that are a little hyper and they have a focusing issue, if they would change the foods and eat less of the food coloring and be more on a better diet and do exercise, they will be really in a much better position to deal with the ADHD.
You know, Mrs.
But I would like to share how educators can help us more.
Okay. Please do.
Modify the assignment, but privately, to avoid embarrassing the child. Give shorter lessons and more of them, which makes it easier for children to stay focused. Acknowledge even partial success and extend approval generously. Compliment even in the middle of the assignment to encourage continued focused performance. Make corrections with a light hand. Instead of try harder next time, I see how hard you tried. Keep up the effort. It's paying off. Smile and make eye contact with the child. Use his name in the lesson or example that is being taught to the entire class. Tap on the desk or use other codes to bring the child back into focus. Alert the child's attention with a phrase such as, "This is important." Break down longer directions into simple chunks. Very important. Break things down to smaller pieces. Encourage the child to underline the key words of directions. This allows them to get moving when they don't understand this long passage. Encourage him to mark incorrect multiple choice answers with an X. This allows them to get started quickly while forcing them to read all of the choices before making a final selection. Allow physically hyperactive children out of their seats to hand out and pick up papers. And this is last but not least in this category. Take a moment or two every day or two to speak privately to a student. Give them a 2-second pep talk. Mention something positive you happen to notice regarding the student's work, behavior, or self-control, or focusing, and motivate them and say, "I'm looking at you. We're going to work together to make this a great day."
So we want to build their self-esteem.
If they believe in themselves, they will be more in control, and they will feel better, and they will act appropriately.
That's great advice, because a lot of times it could be even mechanchim, and especially parents. You know, if the child is not performing up to par, then they could be even criticized and put down. You better do better next time. Or the teacher spoke to me the other day and said, you're up and about, you're not focusing, this and that. I think we just feed them positive, 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 and hopefully now building their self-esteem. And like you say, it's little things at a time instead of trying to move mountains at one shot. If we do little things at a time, that can help motivate them, show that they can do it, and move them in a right positive direction.
Rebbe Eliezer, 1,000,000%, exactly that. When a Rebbe will show a Talmud that he loves the Talmud, and he will even take a little brown bag and come into class, have a private little talk with the Talmud, and put a donut into the bag. I'm not saying a donut has so much sugar that I would say a donut. We're not going to go give him celery sticks. That's not really going to motivate him that day to learn better. Even if once in a while we give the child a donut in a bag and say, "I have a surprise for you." Even a bacher in high school, I've done it with my clients, and you say, if you're going to show till recess that you're really with the class and you're participating, you're taking notes, you get this donut. And believe me, the mother was shocked. She said, "It worked. It really worked. My son felt so good that the Rebbe cared so much about him that went to the bakery before school and bought a donut for my son."
I'm going to mention something personally, Mrs. Schoenfeld. It'll be music to your ears. When I first was in the yeshiva, one of my first years, I remember a Rebbe came over to me and put his arm around me and said, "Eliezer, You're doing great. You're going to be, you'll see, you'll be able to advance to a top yeshiva, and you're doing great. I can see visually, you're going how many years? Many, many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I can see in my right now, visualize myself, that moment when he put his arm around me and he said these words to me. And it made such an impact.
It makes a vast difference. We do better in classes when our professors, our rebbeim, and our teachers show interest in us and give us a compliment. Even when our parents say a good word, or anyone, any of our colleagues give us a good word or a pat on the back, and they say, hey, you did a great job, it makes us move much, much more after that.
Right. Such
no negativity, of course not. And I'd like to share some modifications for children that have difficulty with reading. Here are some ideas. Encourage fidgeting. It sounds a little bit counterintuitive to encourage fidgeting, but children with ADHD benefit from distractions. In reality, it is not that they can't focus. Instead, they focus on everything. So if you give them a pencil to tap or a stress ball to squeeze while they are reading, they'll be able to concentrate better. Remember, these students who are designed to focus on more than one thing at once, that's why they do so much better if they're fidgeting and they're squeezing a ball and they're holding and they're tapping a pencil. It may bother the Rebbe a little bit, but if they do things quietly in their seats while listening, it'll make it much easier for them. By providing them with the second activity in addition to reading, they are no longer looking for what else they can do to distract the class. Here's another idea. Provide breaks in reading. In a classroom setting, this method would be very frustrating to those students who are focused on the text. However, when reading in the small groups or individually, it's great to have a child break and tell you a story that is related to the reading. And then you go back to the reading and they'll be much more focused. Here's another one. Engage other areas of their brain. While the child is reading, encourage him to paint a picture in his mind. This will stimulate the optical region of his brain. And after a few minutes, ask him to share what picture he visualized. This will allow him to have multiple focuses, but remain on the task at hand, which is the reading. In addition, you can encourage the child to take notes while reading, and note-taking requires motor skills, of course, and hand-eye coordination, but this will also help the child. Again, this technique allows the child multiple centers of concentration while still reading. Okay, there are two other little things you could say. Utilize books on tape for the younger children. That would be very helpful because it's a multi-sensory experience. And break the assignments into manageable pieces. No one has limitless attention spans. However, children with ADHD have shorter attention spans. So, that being said, we need to break things down in smaller parts. The breaks help them regroup and refocus. And that helps children tremendously with the ADHD and reading.
So it'd be a great idea at the Torah Masorah Convention to get up and give to the Mechanchim, you know, all these valuable tools that they could implement in the classroom setting.
Right. I will be at the convention in Eretz Hashem this weekend, and I have many, many materials that I will share with the Mechanchim and Mechanchos that will be there.
Okay, I'd like to ask you a question now. If a child, I get this many times coming into my office from the mother, the father, or both, the parent's child recently diagnosed with ADHD, attention deficit, hyperactive disorder. Now, does this mean he's going to be like, this is his roadmap for life in which he will not be able to succeed? Or it's just, what's your input? We've heard a little bit about this from you. And in learning Gemara, that means he can't really focus on the Gemara and the material in the Gemara. He can't keep his train of thought, you know, with the Rebbe as he's explaining. He cannot repeat the shir from his Rebbe. So these children that now got a workup and they were diagnosed with ADHD, what do you feel as far as, what's going to happen now, a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line? Is this their roadmap?
No, absolutely not. They'll be very, very, very successful. And I say very, very, very because I've seen it happen. They are not, you know, as we say, lost souls. They are going to be Metrim very successful. There are thousands of extremely successful people who argue that they were successful because of their ADHD, not in spite of it. As I was speaking to Revitzin Bolka, I was sharing some thoughts with her, and she feels, as well as I do, encourage the child to push himself beyond. Be a pushy mother. If the school feels we have to modify the assignment, which is wonderful, try to fight to push him as much as possible with his expectations, of course. We should not lower our expectations, because these children will succeed above and beyond. And then if we show the schools that we don't want to, you know, settle for less, the school will be on board with us, and they will work with us and give the child a full education and modify it to the child's needs.
That's great advice, tremendous advice. Let me ask you now, this child is, again, evaluated. We've gone in the past on my series on ADHD of who does the evaluation, but let's say there was a proper evaluation. And now the parents are concerned about giving their children Ritalin to address this ADHD disorder or issues. What do you feel? What do the parents do? Where should they turn to?
Okay, I'm not a doctor, but I've spoken to many, many doctors, and I'd like to share some thoughts of, you know, that I've come out with because of this. Ritalin is always asked, and there are many other of this, Focalin and Ritalin and Vyvanse, and I could give you a whole list of medications. But the reason I wrote the children's book about this topic called My Friend the Troublemaker, I wanted to provide the top tips for helping children with ADHD. And in my book, I write, little icons, use a daily planner to help these kids. Set a timer for small tasks. Squeeze a stress ball to concentrate. Set up a reward system. Take short breaks so that the child could regroup and refocus. And medication can be paired with these behavioral modifications if it's necessary. But my first goal is to try to get an ADHD coach. I feel a coach and working with the Rebbe and the teacher and the parents as a team will do more good most of the time than just medicating without any outside intervention, without any coach.
You know, one of my colleagues, the one of the children over here of this colleague, Kim, comes home from school like just non-compliant, very upset, maybe had a hard day at school, maybe let low self-esteem. So the parent says to the child, very good advice. I would like you now to go run around the block. Now, it's a very, you know, if you're talking about the avenues, let's say they live between 14th and 15th, and they're on 44th Street, and they're going to run around going down to 15th and coming up 43rd and then going around to 14th Avenue. Let's say just that running around the block alone, the child comes home a different child. Just let out that excess energy, that frustration by doing a simple task as exercise.
Right. Exercise is very, very helpful. It's even good for anxiety, and ADHD is part of anxiety, as we spoke about on our other radio shows. But I would like to share with you, Rebbe Eliezer, something extremely interesting that just came out in a very popular child neurology journal. I'd like to share this with you. This is amazing. Current research shows that ADHD children are often socially immature. Their interactions with others often appear unfriendly, awkward, remote, abrasive, domineering, or insensitive. They tend not to be able to read social cues and to be rebuffed by peers for inappropriate behavior. Social rejection provokes negative behavior that triggers more rejection, which in turn reinforces the child's social isolation. This is the main point now. Although medication, in answer to your question, this is the medication, Nakuda. Although medication has been used for years to to improve control over behavior and to stimulate and increase attention, medication does not erase the negative feelings and low self-esteem. It does not reverse the ingrained habits and behavior in ADHD children that tend to alienate their peers. That is an acute about medication. Many experts believe that helping ADHD children to rebuild their self-esteem and to master their social skills should precede, or at the very least, accompany the use of medication. Only when ADHD kids can truly believe that they are important and worthwhile and can exercise control over their lives will they be able to succeed. Isn't that beautiful?
It's beautiful. It's phenomenal.
We need to give them that extra help and believe in them and love them and motivate them. And that is something that medication cannot do.
I think the tools that you've mentioned are phenomenal. They're tremendous tools. You know, I see a lot of times when the parents come to me, the handwriting of these children, you can just tell from the handwriting that they're so unorganized. And that probably frustrates them, and that probably decreases their self-esteem. If they could use some of these tools, or all of these tools, in fact, would be optimal, in order to organize themselves, you know what I mean? I'll bet you would get a better handwriting. It would address the underlying problems. Like you say, medication is sometimes needed, but it's a Band-Aid. It's not getting to the foundation, the root of the problem.
Right. There was another article, and they say also with their social relationships with children, with boys, with girls, it doesn't matter, but children with ADHD are 4 times more likely to be bullies because they're feeling so badly about themselves, they're bullying others, and also 10 times more prone to be bullied because they become so socially isolated because of their behaviors. And they become so frustrated, the children are starting to make fun of them. They're not your run-of-the-mill, some of them. And therefore, it is so important to give them a little help with this so that children in the class, they shouldn't become the bully. They shouldn't be the victim. They should really work with someone. Of course, parents are a tremendous, tremendous asset, and the teacher and the Rebbe could make or break the child. Certainly, but a coach could give the parent, the educator, a very clear perspective as to what's expected, what's normal, what's not normal, and how we can help. When is necessary, very important. When is medication important? When is the counseling important? And all this can be done by one short visit to a coach, an ADHD coach that could really guide the school, the Rebbe, the teacher, and all the personnel in order to help these kids.
So according to what you're saying, can I bring out a point? Let's say we have a child, we'll call him Chaim. And Chaim is, he bullies the other children, and the parents, you know, and the other kids that he's been bullying come home and they cry into their parents, and the parents go to the teacher, to the principal, you know, we got to do something with Chaim. And the principal brings him in and starts, you know, giving him certain, you know, things, or takonos, or tells him he can't come back to school if he's going to keep bullying. So maybe if we go to the underlying problem with Chaim over here, that he keeps bullying all these other children, is because if we address these issues that you mentioned, maybe that's the reason why he has the necessity or feels the necessity to go now to bully other children. So we're not, in other words, just by expelling him or giving him punishments, we're really overlooking the foundation, the root of the problem.
Definitely. Definitely. The root of the, we need to go to the root. As you said earlier, we need to go to the root of the problem. Once we establish what the issue is and why is the child, why does a bully bully? Why do these children bully? Why are they the target, the victim of being bullied? It comes for a reason. Their performance, they're socially isolated, they're so frustrated in class that even recess time they can't perform as others because they don't feel good about themselves. And when children don't feel good, they do things that sometimes are awkward and inappropriate.
Well, that's so true. And you find that even in adults. Adults, very much in adults, you know, they do things inappropriate only because they're lacking. They have such low self-esteem, and they're coming across, you know, Mr. Confident. And they, you know, they look like they're sort of like dictators, or they want to have the take advantage of other people. And at the end of the day, and they're, if you look at to the root of what's going on with inside of them, they themselves, low self-esteem, not a good image of themselves, you know what I mean? So they try and override that or cover that up with this very strong, aggressive behavior.
Right, but my feeling to sum things up is ADHD is not a sickness. It is not a problem. We could make it into an asset. We really, truly could make ADHD into an asset. And a good coach could show the school and the parents and everyone working with the child how we can take this ADHD, we could make it into an exuberance, we could make it into all that excess energy could be taken, and we could make the child into a superstar.
No question. That's, you're given such a wealth of information over here. Just before we end with so precious interview, is there any other points that you would like to bring out for our listeners? I'm sure our listeners, whatever you could mention to them.
Sure. Advice. What I would like to end with, as I end with every single interview, and I so believe it, everything is Biyad Hashem. We need to have emunah and bitachon and know that we are just puppets, and everything with siyata d'shmaya and with the proper coach and with the proper tefillis and siyata d'shmaya, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is going to help us all. And he's going to help, and we should find the right mechanchim and the right mechanchos to help our children. That's what we daven for. The right shlichim should be involved with our kinderlach. That's what we always daven for. But the right Rebbe, I know a child that I was working with in the seventh grade. He had a magnificent Rebbe. Magnificent! The child was doing absolutely wonderfully. Unfortunately, in the eighth grade, he wasn't as lucky. He didn't connect with his Rebbe, and he wasn't. All of a sudden, he needed so much more medication and intervention because the Rebbe didn't really love him that much. He didn't see eye to eye with him. And that many times happens. People, it has to be the right shidduch. So with the right siyata d'shmaya, we should have the right rebbeim and the right mechanchim, the right teachers to connect. And if anybody would need any more information, I'll be more than happy if they call me at 718-382-5437. It'll be my pleasure and honor to help and answer any questions on anxiety, ADHD, or any of these in Yonim to help make a child prosper and be a happy, self-confident child.
Maybe you want to just repeat your number, your contact number one more time?
Sure, sure. My contact number is 718-382-5437. And it's always a pleasure being on the show, Rabbi Eliezer, with all the supplements, the natural supplements. I'm sure children will do so much better. There's so much in your store that all the children and adults could truly, truly benefit from.
Thank you so much again. Once again, we love having you on the show, Mrs. Schoenfeld. Your wealth of information, your wealth of knowledge is so crucial. People should understand, and the way you give it over is so crystal clear. Again, we thank you so much, Radio J. Root, myself, for being on the show. And Bez Hashem, in the near, very, very near future, we hope to have you again on the show.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Have a great Shabbos, Mrs. Schoenfeld.
Get in Shabbos. Be well.
Thank you. Okay, before we, I'd like to spend some few minutes now before the end of the show and maybe taking a couple of questions. We've heard from Mrs. Schoenfeld the wealth of information, the tools that we could implement, whether the mechanchim, the parents for ADD, ADHD. From a nutritional perspective, I could tell you there is no question about it. Besides our halakha neshama, What houses our heilig and neshama is our body, is our guf. And our guf needs the right ingredients. If we don't have the right fuel, I remember I mentioned once in the past that when I was in Lakewood, New Jersey, and I had a car, it was an older car. If I put in regular fuel, regular gas at this gas station, I would, every time I would be at a stoplight and I would start go and put on the accelerator, my car would make a knocking noise. When I used premium gas, it didn't make any knocking noise whatsoever. It was smooth riding. What is the fuel? The gatekeepers, your mothers out there, what fuel are we putting into our children? It happens to be a major, major problem in the schools today, in the Chadarim, in the Beis Yaakov, what the kids are eating, whether it's breakfast, whether it's lunch. How can a child perform well when he goes to school with eating a sugary cereal, or at school a sugary cereal with some milk? This is his now breakfast. This is his fuel. It's not even regular fuel that I used to put in with the knocking noise. It's more inferior than the regular fuel. The child needs the right recipe, ingredients, the right fuel to perform optimally. Now, a protein. How many children don't get protein? As I mentioned in the past, eggs, not the white of the egg, the yellow of the egg. White has protein also, but the yellow of the egg has the most nutrients in that egg. We need optimal protein. Eggs happen to be a very optimal form of protein. If the child doesn't eat eggs, what about a shake? NutriSupreme has whey shakes. That's whey, W-H-E-Y. Per serving, anywhere from 20 to 25 grams of protein. Protein is made, amino acids make up protein. Neurotransmitters, what are the medications that Mrs. Schoenfeld spoke about, whether it's the Ritalin or the Adderall, whether it's Concerta, you're talking about dopamine, the neurotransmitter of dopamine. That's in the spotlight with ADD, ADHD. In the spotlight with depression is serotonin. As I mentioned, I was on the phone with a psychiatrist today. Serotonin, that is also not so simple. It's not just a serotonin issue, which we've spoken about in the past. It could be an inflammatory process going on in the brain, which today's the way of life, the diet we eat today, the foods that go into the mouths of our kids today, and the sedentary way promotes inflammation. Now, if the child needs, before they go to school, they need breakfast is the most important meal for that child. That child needs good, optimal protein, whether it's an egg, whether it's whey protein. There's not so many choices of good protein. A lot of these kids are eating carbs, too many refined carbs. The juices, which is just basically a simple carbohydrate. What do you expect? How do you expect this child to perform? He is on it like a seesaw. He's on a merry-go-round. He's hanging from the ceiling. Why do I see children that come into my office with this messy handwriting? They can't sit still. They're in my office. They're running around. The father and the mother are sitting. There's a chair for the child also, besides the mother and the father, and the child can't sit in the chair. The child is running around the room. Why can't the child sit? So if you're going to feed him a diet that's high in refined carbohydrates and this type of food, and not get enough protein, and not get enough healthy fats, not get the omega-3 fatty acids, not getting the minerals, which is very difficult to get in the diet, the calcium and the magnesium and the zinc and the chromium to maintain optimal blood sugar. How do you expect this child to perform? Again, the goof, our body, our halak and neshama. We need to put optimal fuel, premium fuel, like it with the gas in the car, not to get the knocking nose. We want the children to be able to sit with Yishuv Hadas and be able to understand and be able to focus and not be fidgety and not be able to listen clearly, follow directions, understand what the Rebbe says, be able to repeat what the Rebbe says. There is no question whatsoever that if you have the right roadmap, the right ingredients, the right fuel, you will see a different child. No question about it. Again, optimal protein. I see a few things that across the board, almost every child is missing. Enough protein, optimal protein during the day, especially at breakfast and at lunch. What are they serving for lunch today? We need to work with the yeshivas, with the chadarim. We need to get them good food, optimal protein, not just the macaroni and the cheese, a lot of macaroni, a lot of carbohydrates with little protein. The child still needs to get through the rest of the day, right? He still gets, if he has Hebrew subjects in the morning, has English in the afternoon, he got to get through the day with his math, with his English, whatever he's doing, or if it's just a Limuri HaKodesh school, then whatever the afternoon curriculum is, needs to get through that afternoon. Now, afternoon is a time for slumps. We all go through slumps in the afternoon. Oh, Mr. Gruber, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. Why am I so tired at 3 or 4 o'clock? Now, we got to start with the foundation of proper sleep. Obviously, you know, we need sleep. So now recently a parent comes to my office with a child. The child goes to bed at 9 o'clock. The child didn't fall asleep till 10:30 at night. That means he's on the bed for an hour and a half before he goes to sleep. How do you expect this child to perform well the next day if he doesn't get quantity, the optimal sleep, whether quantity or quality of sleep? If it's taking him an hour and a half to go to sleep, that's too long. That child, if he's exercised during the day, the child should be in sleep within 15 minutes. He should be asleep once he gets into that bed. If he's not asleep within around 15 or so minutes, then we need to address why, especially an hour, hour and a half. I mean, that's so long to fall asleep. Baruch Hashem, I know when I go to sleep, you know, okay, I'm past the adolescent, young adult age, you know, I'm within, let's say, I would say literally, believe Guzma, I would say within 60 seconds, I'm asleep. Okay, I have a very, you know, very busy schedule, very busy day, but within 60 seconds, I'm asleep. Now, I remember recently, I don't recommend this for children, but let's say the adults with ADD, ADHD don't sleep well. I had somebody who goes to sleep with an eye shield, and he goes to sleep with earplugs. He tells me in the morning when he wakes up, the earplugs are on the floor, the eye shield is on the floor. That means he doesn't get an optimal sleep. He's in a very not restful sleep mode. So even though he goes to sleep, and he falls asleep within 15, 20 minutes, and he sleeps at night, but his eye shield is on the floor. His earplugs are on the floor. His blanket is on the floor. The only thing still on the bed maybe is his pillow, but his pillow is in a different place where it started. One pillow is away from his head, the other is on the other side of his head. So that means he did not get a restful sleep. How can we get a restful sleep? So if we implement exercise and we have a good diet, we're not on a seesaw with these simple refined carbohydrates, then for an adult, not a child, then Baruch Hashem, we came out with a phenomenal formula. I used this formula. I gave him a sample of this person who has the earplugs on the floor and the covers off and the covers on the floor and the eye shield on the floor. I gave him a product called Sure Sleep, S-U-R-E, Sure Sleep. He calls me up after a couple of days. He says, Mr. Gruber, it's the first time that my earplugs are in my ears and my eye shield is on my eyes and my blanket is on my bed, on my body. So that means he got a restful sleep. That means he feels better. He's be able to function better. He's able to focus better. He's less stressed because he got a restful sleep. So important for any person to perform optimally is a good night's sleep. Now, for children, I do not recommend melatonin. I think the children today, they're producing plenty of melatonin. The pineal gland in the middle of her brain, we have a gland that produces a hormone. Melatonin is a hormone, and that's produced by the pineal gland in the middle of the brain. So if you're going to give your child a quick fix and give them these drops or these chewables or whatever, melatonin, so sure they're going to fall asleep because you're using melatonin as a drug. Anybody, if I take melatonin in the middle of the day, I don't have a melatonin problem, a deficiency, but I'm going to probably fall asleep also if I take melatonin. You're using it like you're using a sleeping pill, a pharmaceutical drug. It is natural, but you're using it like a drug. And the kids don't need hormones. They don't need more hormones. Why put hormones into children? Let's give them what they're missing. What are they missing? They're missing minerals. There is no question if I do a nutritional intake on 100 children over the last few months, couple months that have come through my office. Let's take 100 children and I do a nutritional intake over the last 3 days, a week of what they're eating. There is no question they are missing minerals. They're missing magnesium. Where do you get magnesium? You get magnesium in avocados. You get it in nuts. You get it in dark green leafy vegetables like romaine lettuce. How much lettuce, romaine lettuce, how much avocado, how much nuts are our children eating? So that missing, they're missing magnesium. Magnesium calms down the body. It's a heart mineral. It's a mineral that works in 300 different enzymatic as a coenzyme in the body that needs for us so important, the rhythm of the heart, so many important functions, application is magnesium, and they're not getting magnesium, and it helps to calm them down. What about calcium? Where do they get calcium? Besides their bone health, you know, say they don't get early osteoporosis, which is a problem today, early osteoporosis, but it helps. It works together. They work together in their opposites, magnesium and calcium. So we need both magnesium and calcium, not calcium carbonate. Somebody came to my office yesterday, and they're popping calcium carbonate. Why are you popping calcium carbonate? It's an inferior form of calcium. And too much calcium without the cofactors, without the magnesium, without the vitamin D, without the vitamin K. I mean, the vitamin K is somebody's own blood thinners. You cannot take vitamin K. But these are the cofactors. Too much calcium. We don't want calcification of arteries. We don't want calcification in soft tissue. We want calcium to do what it needs to do. The kids are missing these minerals, magnesium, calcium. Everybody is missing vitamin D. Where do you get vitamin D? Now we're coming to the summer, Baruch Hashem. We had a very brutal winter. It was a very difficult winter this year. We're coming now to the summertime. People in another month, a month and a half or so, be going to the bungalow colonies. Now, bungalow colonies, if to get vitamin D from a natural source means the sun, that's really the only place to get vitamin D, you need about 20 minutes of exposure, not just your hands, not just your face. You need about 30-40%. That means you need to be by a swimming pool or by the beach or let's say in the Tanya where there's, you know, Betznias, or in places where you have a Betznias place, then you can be in the sun 30-40% of your body exposed. Do not put on sunscreen for this first 20 minutes, because the sunscreen is going to block. You will not be able to get the benefit of the sun for vitamin D production if you're going to go before you go out in the sun, put on sunscreen. Sunscreen is an issue today. That's not the topic of the show, whether it's good, whether it's not good, but we're talking about now for vitamin D. You don't need that much time. You need about 20 minutes, and it depends on the skin color. Are you light skin color? Are you fair skin color? Are you dark skin color? The darker the skin, the more they need sun exposure. The lighter the skin. We do not want to get sunburned. Remember, we do not want to get sunburned. We have to protect ourselves from sunscreen. It's people today, they go out in the sun, they go out when they're in the bungalow colonies at the heat of the day, and they're out for hours, and people go to swimming pools, they're out for hours. That's not a good thing. There is problems of certain types of skin cancer that's not, again, the subject matter, but we want to protect ourselves from skin cancer. But we want to get the value, the best form, the best way to get vitamin D is from the sun, not from a pill. Pill is secondary. Now, you only get the sun is only strong enough from the months of around April, May to September, October in the northeastern part of the United States. Past October, the sun is not strong enough. So you don't get optimal vitamin D from the sun past that month. Again, but we want to get. Now, they're missing again. We went through the magnesium, went through the calcium, we went through the vitamin D. Now, how much vitamin D should you take? Depends. An infant right away needs 400 IU. Over one, I recommend 1,000 IU. After 2-3 years old, get tested. 25-hydroxy, get tested, because the doses is not what the issue, what's important, the level. The level will determine what the dosage of vitamin D should be. And then we'll retest after 3 or 4 months to see if we got a bullseye or close to a bullseye with the blood levels. We're looking for optimal blood levels of vitamin D. And what about omega-3? Where do you get omega-3? The brain is 60% fat by dry weight. 30% plus minus is omega-3. Where are the kids getting omega-3? For neurotransmitter, we spoke about dopamine and ADD, ADHD. Where are they getting omega-3? Are they eating salmon? The question is salmon. Salmon, is it farm-raised salmon? The problem with farm-raised salmon is the fish only have, salmon only have omega-3 from what they eat at the bottom of the ocean. So if they're raised in a controlled environment, like they're farm-raised, so that can compromise the amount of omega-3 fatty acids, the EPA, DHA. In fact, sardines is probably the better source of omega-3, the wild sardines. And where else do you get it? You get it from anchovies, you get it from mackerel. So the kids today, most kids, the majority, 90% plus of the parents or children that come to my office, do not eat fish. Maybe they eat salmon once a week. Maybe they eat it on Shabbos. But they don't eat enough of it to supply them with the optimum amount. How in the world can you have a healthy brain function, brain chemistry, whether it's memory, whether it's focus, whether it's moods? In fact, omega-3 is a mood elevator. In fact, they did a study in the UK in aggressive prisoners that fight in prison setting. They hit each other. They beat each other. We spoke about bullying with Mrs. Schoenfeld. And they did a study, and Dr. Hibbelin from the NIH, who I did an interview with, sent me the results from that study in the UK in these prisoners when they were given omega-3 and a multivitamin. There was a 37.5% decrease in this hitting and this beating and this bullying and this aggressive behavior. And Dr. Hibbelin looked at 38 countries. What a sample size. 38 countries, major. More aggressive behavior, more, not just aggressive behavior, more chas v'sham, chalila v'chas, more homicides, more killings. This aggressive habit in translating to killings. We know what's going on in the United States today. When I was going to school, you're afraid to chew gum. You're afraid to talk out. Now the teachers, at least in the public school setting, are worried about the kids going to pull out a gun on them. The aggressive behavior, why is there such aggressive behavior today? Because again, what fuel are we giving our children? It's not even the regular gas. It's even far from the regular gas. We're using the wrong fuel totally with our children. It's not inferior like the regular, the plus, the premium. We're not even given regular. We're given such fuel that's not fuel for our bodies. It's not roi for achilles kelev. I wouldn't give it to a kelev. Sar b'ayim. I wouldn't give it. The man came to my office and gave it to his child. The child was in red dye number 40. The kid goes into explosive behavior with red dye 40, red color 40. What do you expect from our children today? Why is this such increasing leaps and bounds, this diagnosis of ADHD? Why? One of the reasons is because the fuel is not roi for achilles kelev. It's not roi for anybody. It's not, there's no baal tashchis on this. There's no din of baal tashchis on this because it's not, it's a mazik. And I'm not an extremist yet. We can have our cake. We can have our chocolate bar. I happen to like chocolate, but in moderation. And if you're going to take it with low sugar content, if you eat foods that you're going to give to your children, if your children has this ADD, ADHD diagnosis or tendency towards ADD, ADHD, don't give them foods that's over 3 grams of sugar. 3 grams is maximum because except maybe on special occasions, maybe on a Shabbos, maybe on a Yom Tov, maybe on a Siyum, but not on a daily basis. We are putting the fuel into the recipes that we're putting into our children are a recipe for attention deficit hyperactive disorder. It is an ADHD food. If I could go to the supermarkets and I could go down the aisles, especially the candy aisles with all the coloring and all the synthetic garbage, I would like to, instead of with this fancy packaging, and you know, it looks, you know, to the eyes like, wow, that looks like a great tasting food. I should go in and get permission and put on those foods a sticker. The sticker is going to say ADHD. And this is going to be levels of ADHD. This is premium ADHD. This is regular ADHD, which means there are foods depending on the makeup, depending on the ingredients of the particular food. These are ADHD foods. So we're sort of giving the recipes, we're feeding them the ADHD. It's very ironic because we don't want ADHD. So we need to work with the home, the gatekeepers, we need to work in the kitchens. We need to modify our kitchens. We need to modify the schools, with the lunches or the snacks or what they give out in school today. The roll-ups and the this and all the garbage that are given to our kids. How do we expect them to perform properly? I see this over and over and over again. It's not rocket science. I'm not an extremist. I just see more and more we are feeding our kids the wrong. So again, to recap, sikum, we need the minerals, we need the calcium, we need the magnesium. We also need the zinc and we need the chromium, so we need good protein. You're getting the amino acids, you're getting from animal protein. The eggs is a great protein. If he doesn't like eggs, Rebecca's a whey shake. NutraSupreme has phenomenal tasting flavors of whey protein. We even have whey protein for people on diets and people that are overweight, which is also massive, with erythritol and stevia, great tasting vanilla, chocolate, whey protein. Let's get the right recipe, the right ingredients, and Be'ezra Hashem, with tefillah to the Rabbanu Shalom, and daven for our children. There is no question, this is our shtadlis, the right recipe, with the right tefillah, we're gonna reap the benefits, and our children are going to say, hey, ma, ta, we now, I feel like a different child. I'm able to focus. I have one child that came to me with the parents. They now ask for it. They ask, give me the Nature's Calm. Give me the omega-3. The father calls me up on a Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock. I'm closed already. Mr. Gruber, it's an emergency. It's an emergency. My child needs it like air to breathe and water to drink, not to be dehydrated. He needs it. So let's, again, tefillah, we need the Dam to Rabbanu Shalom, and we need the right hishtalis. I would like to give out the numbers before we enter the show. The number for the Nusha Supreme Research and Education Center, located again at 4315 14th Avenue. The 800 number is 888-68-NUTRI. The local number is 718-853-0644. If you would like to email me questions, subject matters to speak on the show, egruber@nutrisupreme.com. Again, egruber@nutrisupreme.com. Our website is www.nutrisupreme.com. I wish all of you a wonderful Shabbos, and thank you so much for listening.